Okay, welcome to the call. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the call. Again, so you want to press 1 if you want to talk to me. And we've got a couple of guests coming in, but we had a little bit of a technical hiccup, so it's going to take a minute or two for them to come on. But I just want to mention that we did a visualization for the holiday season, which we sent an email about. And if you haven't gotten that visualization, email Joe Bean or email Janine, actually, at help@thegabrielmethod.com to get that visualization. It's a good visualization. It's a very effective visualization to help get you through the holiday season in a positive way, you know, because we're going to these parties, we're meeting with family, we're meeting with friends, and you want to be able to go. You want to be able to go to these parties. You want to be able to enjoy yourself, not worry about if you're eating too much. And what typically happens is you end up getting stressed out, and you end up drinking and eating more than you otherwise would, simply because you're stressed out about the party. So, rather than do that, if you listen to this quick 6-minute visualization, then you're probably going to be able to go through the holiday season in a much easier way. And also, I made a recording for one of the members of the case study to listen for quitting smoking. If anyone's interested, it's a visualization for quitting smoking. And I actually used a visualization very similar to this when I was a teenager to quit smoking. I had a little bit of a smoking habit when I was 14, 15, which, of course, I shouldn't have. But I did this visualization where I just sort of imagined that I was about to taste the cigarette and it tasted like tar and I spit it out and it was repulsive. And that worked really, really well for us for me to get off of my addiction to cigarettes. So if anyone's interested, I made this visualization. I think it's going to be a very good visualization, very effective. And if anyone's interested, let us know and I'll send you the visualization. Let me know what you think of it. Also, one other announcement. Then I'm going to bring Coach Brian in, but one other announcement, and that is that we sent out a notice about a book that we're writing on childhood obesity, and we're doing it with Dr. Patricia Reba, and we're asking for comments, and we got hundreds of comments on it, and I'm just wondering if you saw that email, definitely take a look at some of the comments. If you have any questions or comments, I'd like to hear from you too about the way we can best support kids and make it the best book possible. So with that, I just want to bring in Coach Brian and see what's happening with him. And then if you have any questions, press 1. We'll talk. Thanks. Brian, are you there?
I'm here, John. G'day. How are you?
Hey, good. Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. And hello to everyone that's listening. I just wanted to just a couple of minutes. I know that there's a few people that are moving into month 5, so fitness, you know, pops up as the topic of interest that we're focusing on then. And I just went through and I just jotted down a few, you know, sort of interesting facts to do with, you know, do with fitness. So I thought I'd just share quickly today. The first one I've got here is that you're never actually too old to build muscle. So it's always physiologically possible that with the right resistance training, you've got the ability to build some muscle. So, you know, you're never too old, effectively, to start.
That's a good point. I just want to mention one thing about that, and that is that as you get older, typically, if you don't do certain things to change that, your certain hormones, growth hormone, and then for men, testosterone, they start to decline, and that causes you to lose muscle mass if you don't do something about it. So just some simple exercises to do resistance training to build muscle will increase growth hormone and increase the stimulation of testosterone, and will change all that. And those are, like, to me, it doesn't take a lot. I mean, you know, you and I made a fitness video, which, by the way, is going to come out in February. But, you know, you don't have to do, you know, an hour a day, 7 days a week to get the result.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the intensity of your workout is, like, you know, is very important in creating the right chemistry so your body adapts in the way that it will stimulate growth and also stimulate an increased aerobic capacity and put you into that fat burning mode. Basically, like, you know, resistance training makes your cells more sensitive to insulin, which is, you know, a real plus when you're trying to shift some weight.
Right, right. Okay.
All right, so next one on the list here, and I really like this one. A muscle that's dehydrated by a mere 3% will have a decrease in its strength of just over 10%. So you can just see how important that is to keep yourself hydrated, not only for your physical training, but just your general level of, you know, strength when you're going around doing your home duties or, you know, just getting around the place.
That's interesting. You know, I also find, I mean, we talk a lot about drinking water and getting as hydrated as possible. I find that if I end up being dehydrated, I am kind of tired and foggy, and I start craving junk food. That's what happened to me. For a long time, I was doing this Bikram yoga, which you're doing yoga in a hot room, and you're just sweating buckets. And, you know, it's really hard to rehydrate after that. And sometimes I wouldn't forget about it. I wouldn't have time. And in the afternoon, I'd just be exhausted and craving all kinds of food. And then it finally dawned on me that I'm just not hydrating myself enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're tough. They're killer. Yoga's hard enough as it is, but doing it in a hot room makes it even more demanding. So the next one I've got on my list here, some research that I read during the week, that people who exercise outdoors, so get out in the sunshine, burn more fat percentage than those that train inside. So if it's possible for you to do some training outside, then you get the advantage of the vitamin D. You know, this is what I'm presuming, but the influence of the vitamin D on the whole fat burning mechanism as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it's two things. One is definitely the vitamin D, getting out in the sun, doing vitamin D. But I also think that when you exercise outdoors, you're going to enjoy it more. You're going to do it longer. Like, you know, when you go for a bike ride, when you're on the stationary bike, you're counting every second. You know, and just getting the 10 minutes, 20 minutes is a humongous effort. But when you're outdoors, you're not really thinking about it. 20 minutes just goes by right away.
Mm. True.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. I agree. You know, the whole idea of it being playful and enjoyable, you know, it's very encouraging, and then exercise isn't a drag. Like, you know, I can't stand going into gyms. I do all of my training outdoors, train all my clients outdoors, and I've just done that, you know, ever since I've been a trainer. And it just seems to make sense. You know, you're outdoors, you're getting fresh air. The whole idea of standing on a treadmill, you know, staring at a TV screen, just doesn't go together for me, but, you know, I suppose depending on where you live and your environment, but if you can get outdoors and do it, then by all means, there's lots of benefits for doing that. The next one I've got on my list here is that, which is really encouraging, this one, it takes twice as long to lose muscle as it does to build it. So muscle actually builds, you know, very quickly.
That's interesting. And are we talking about muscle that sort of has a memory, you know, like if you used to be muscular? Because I find that for people that used to have muscle and then they haven't done anything for a while, if they start lifting weights, they're gonna build muscle very quickly. But some people, you know,
they don't necessarily build the muscle quickly. It's just that they've got that coordination, you know, between their, you know, their nervous system has, or, you know, those pathways have been laid down, you know, previously. So when you start stimulating them again, like the muscle can contract, you know, stronger, more quickly. That's where you get that, you know, that muscle memory from. But, you know, this is indicating that, you know, regardless of whether you have a history of, you know, training or not, that muscle, you know, will build much more quickly than you'll lose it. So it's another good reason to go and, you know, do some lifting.
Okay, cool. What else is happening?
Last one. I got one more thing here that I just read this morning. So sleep, if this is about sleeping, it says that sleep is one of the most important factors when you're looking at fat burning. And this study showed that the more you sleep, the more fat that you burn. So the longer you're awake, the slower your metabolism as your brain attempts to preserve energy. And studies have shown that somewhere between 7.5 to 8 hours is the optimum amount of sleep. And I know we often speak about sleep apnea, and you know, I've sort of wondered, you know, what the correlation is, and there's, you know, obviously loads of research to say that sleep apnea has an effect on it. But, you know, maybe it's because of, maybe one of the reasons because of that, is that reason that the, you know, the brain is thinking that I'm not getting enough sleep, so I need to preserve energy because I'm going to be going for a long period of time. So it puts you, you know, starts burning your fat, you know, like very slowly and preserving as much energy as it can.
Well, there's no question that lack of sleep, and especially sleep apnea, is going to elevate your cortisol levels, which, as we know, is going to cause you to gain weight. I mean, there's no question about that, and there's plenty of research around that. Why it causes you to elevate cortisol levels, I don't think anyone can really answer that. People, you know, it's funny. Nobody really, really knows what sleep is for. I mean, sleep study researchers, they come up with all kinds of kind of out there descriptions of why we need sleep, but nobody knows what goes on when we sleep, and nobody knows why we need it. But one thing's for sure is that when we don't get it, everything that we do is more stressful. Just getting through, you know, like when you're traveling and you haven't slept in the plane for you know, 24 hours, and then you got to catch a bus, and you got to get your luggage, and you're with your family. You're going to fight more. You're tired. You're going to eat junk food. All these things happen, and this happens to people kind of like chronically when they have sleep problems. Like for me, you know, I had really, really bad sleep apnea, and it was just like every single day was like that for me. It was just exhausting and just a nightmare to get through. And that's from not having enough sleep.
And you can see it in little kids. Yeah. Like I've got a 2-year-old. He didn't sleep hardly at all last night, and he's been an absolute nightmare this morning. So I don't think we ever grow out of that pattern.
That's a tough one. Yeah. And my hat's off to you. My girl's 10 years old, so we haven't gotten through that, but that's a tough one. Yeah.
Okay, great. The last one I've got here, and this is one that comes up often, John, is, you know, what's the best time to exercise? And the truth is that there's no best time to exercise. I think the best time to exercise, personally, is you do it when you can, as often as you can, and just make sure that you enjoy, you know, that you enjoy doing it. If it's causing your stress to go up and do it, then you know, it's not working for you. Enjoy it. Do it in the morning. Do it in the afternoon. Do it in the evening. Whenever you can fit it in, comfortably to your lifestyle, then that's the best time to exercise.
Well, you know, there's a lot of theories behind that about, you know, hormonally when the best time to exercise is, in terms of when you're going to burn the most fat. And some people say it's in the morning and this and that, but My kind of feeling on that is, what's most important is that you do it at a time that you're going to be able to stick with it. It's going to be able to be consistent. You know, so if doing it in the first thing, for some people, doing it the first thing in the morning is ideal because they're going to stick with it. As soon as they get up, it's the first thing, and they're not going to blow it up. But other people, it's the exact opposite. They're just going to be too tired in the morning, and maybe 10 o'clock in the morning is better for them, or 3 in the afternoon. So you have to figure out kind of your clock and make it a time that you know you're going to have energy, and you know you're going to feel good and be able to do it.
And, you know, like, you know, like a lot of ladies, you know, when they drop the kids off to school, they, you know, they get all that stuff done, and then, you know, that's the best time for them to, you know, to go off and do it. I think if you can make it a habit and make it part of your daily routine, something that you look forward to, then you've got a much better chance of, you know, sticking to it and enjoying the benefits of it.
So what are, like, when you're talking to some of your clients right now in month 5 and talking about ideas and suggestions, what's a typical pattern of one of your clients in terms of where they were before in exercising and where they are now? What kind of modifications? Are you finding that there's people that are kind of starting fresh with exercise, they haven't been doing any exercise, and you're going to indoctrinate them into it? Or is it more that most people are doing some exercise and you're going to try to kind of refine it a little bit for them?
Well, a bit of both. Like, a lot of people have had experience, you know, with exercise, just as they've had, you know, experience with every type of diet. But, you know, under the Gabriel method, what we're you know, educating them is about, you know, the principles of it being short, of it being intense. So we sort of go along the protocol of like a 4-minute warm-up. So, you know, doing something that will warm up your whole body, like your major muscle groups for 4 minutes. That might be just, you know, some on a or, you know, going for a, like for a walk or some stretches. And then what we do is we do some high intensity work. Oh no, sorry. Then we do some resistance work. So we use like some weights, or you can just do some, you know, push-ups against your kitchen bench, or do some squats where you just simply sit on a chair and stand up. It doesn't need to be, you know, formatted and organized. It just needs to be something that will cause that, you know, that sort of burning sensation that you get in your in your muscles when you're doing resistance work. And then once you've done that, so you do that first, and then you move into the what's known as the high intensity interval training, where you do a short burst of really some sort of some type of aerobic activity, whether that's running, swimming, cycling, rowing, dancing, jumping on the trampoline, anything that, you know, works for you. But you do that for up to about 20 seconds. You know, I wouldn't go any further than 20 seconds. And then give yourself a bit of a rest. And then when you feel as though you've, you know, pretty much fully recovered, you do that again. And you just do that for, you know, about another 4 minutes. And then you go into a cool down. And that might be, again, just, you know, a bit of a walk, a few simple stretches, and you're done.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so much more effective than, you know, I got a Facebook question from somebody called in. Says, he said, I've got a slight weight problem. I do eat grains and sugars. How bad is that? He said, and then he says, I'm a marathon runner. And I run 72 kilometers a week.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, if that doesn't say it all, you know, this guy is a marathon runner that runs 72 kilometers a week and got weight problem. And
what's that exercise demand like saying to his brain? It's saying that, okay, I'm going to be doing this for a long period of time, so I need to burn this fuel slowly.
Yeah, I need to conserve fuel. Is really what it is. And you know, and so this is his scenario, right? So he's exercising, I don't know, 72 kilometers a week, right? So he's way overtraining. Now, overtraining is going to be a stress. It elevates your cortisol levels and causes insulin resistance and causes your body to go into fat storage mode, and that's been documented. And then because he's overtraining and because he's burning so he's exercising so hard, and because his cortisol levels are elevated, he's craving carbs, just junk food all the time, and he's just eating grains and sugars. And eating grains and sugars elevates your insulin levels all the time. So when you combine excessive exercise with dead carbs, to me, that is a recipe for disaster, and I feel really, really bad for this guy, because where do you go from there when you're running 72 kilometers a week? What do I tell him, running 82 kilometers? You know, like, you can't go anywhere from there. So basically what I told him is, I said, look, eat all your carbs live, because I think that's really important, because our bodies with live carbs don't have the same effect on your insulin levels and don't cause the same hormonal problems. Eat as many carbs as you want, but eat them all live. And then have three rest days a week, and then do this interval training.
Yeah.
And so if you change to that, it's so much smarter and so much more effective way to go. Mm.
And you run faster too. You know, your times will improve for his marathon, for the interval training.
Didn't you say with the Tabata protocol that they found that when you're exercising, doing this interval training and actually exercising less,
Japanese researcher Azumu Tabata did an experiment, and it, you know, basically two control groups, one doing like sort of slow aerobic exercise like running, the other one doing the high intensity, and what they found after, I think it was a couple of months or 16 weeks, I'm not sure, but you know, one of those, they found that the control group that did the Tabata type, so that's that high intensity stuff, gain more muscle, improve their aerobic capacity, and lost more body fat than the other group. So that's like only one. That's only one study. However, there's been like loads of other studies, you know, since then that continually, you know, point to this high intensity interval training as the way to go if you want to improve, if you want to reduce the, you know, your level of body fat, improve, you know, your muscles and your aerobic capacity.
Well, that's the part that I found most interesting, is that you're able to increase your aerobic capacity exercising this way. Because most people thought, okay, maybe you could increase your strength, but not your aerobic capacity. And so that to me is the most interesting part of the study. I think that's pretty amazing.
Mm. But, you know, you look at all the footy players and, you know, all the professional athletes that, you know, commonly, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they were running along the beach for like 10, 30, you know, kilometres. Now, if you I do a little bit of work here with a couple of the AFL clubs, and they're all into that high-intensity stuff. It's all they do. It's all short, sharp, and, you know, because the science just keeps proving that that's the way to go if you want to improve your, not only your speed, but your aerobic output.
And, of course, you know, that's something we've been talking about for years from a theoretical perspective. It makes more sense that your body is going to want to be thin from the interval training because it mimics running away from a tiger. And if your body thinks you've got to be fast to run away from a tiger, it's going to change its chemistry to make you want to be thin. So it makes sense theoretically. It's been proven statistically. So that's the way to go. And I think that's the take-home message of this conversation. I appreciate it, is that you don't want to overtrain. You want to do short and interval intensity a couple of times a week at a time of day that you can that works for you, whatever that time is. Do visualization while you're doing it. Do you do visualization when you do your exercise?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've done that for years. I was a sort of a semi-professional athlete, and we've always used visualization, like, you know, before and even after training. So I still, you know, continue to do that and have been encouraging my clients to incorporate it now into their training, and, you know, just makes it such an enormous difference.
Great. Cool. All right, great, Brian. So what are your plans for Christmas and New Year's? Are you going to be around? You guys going camping or...?
Yeah, I'm just about to go Christmas shopping Friday now, so I'm just about to grab Harry and put him in the car and go and battle the shopping centre. So, you know,
good luck with
that. My get thing get eaten.
Great.
It'll be fun. It'll be good. All the best to everyone anyway. That's listening.
Have a great Christmas, Brian, and great news. We'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, you too, John. All the best to everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay, so we've got a number of callers on the line, but... if you want to speak to me, you have to press 1, and that way we know that you're on the line. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to get Shannon from my office. She's got some questions that people have been asking, so we'll bring her in. And then if you have a question, press 1, and Aaron will screen you.
Hi,
Shannon.
John.
Yeah.
I'm here. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Question is from Trudy about medication as a fat trigger. How important is it to be off medication?
Yeah, okay. So there's so many different types of medications, and it's a really tough question to answer. And anyway, it's really hard to say get off medication when your doctor's prescribing medication. So I would never want you to actively get off of any medications simply because it might be causing a problem with your weight loss, unless you had your doctor's blessing. But there are specific medications that can specifically cause weight gain. Now, all medications are going to cause kind of like a toxic load on your body and the liver, and all those things can make it difficult to lose weight, but some are specific. So, for example, if you're taking steroid medication, a cortisol medication, if you're taking insulin, for type 2 diabetes. Now, type 1, you have to. It's not a problem, really. But if you're taking it for type 2 diabetes, those type of things, and certain antidepressants, and also certain hormone replacement therapy administered in certain combinations can cause you, specifically the chemistry that can cause you to gain weight. Now, the answer to me is never just go off the medication. The answer is, how do we address the real issue? So insulin for type 2 diabetes, for example, the way to address the real issue is by reversing insulin resistance, because insulin resistance is what's causing the type 2 diabetes. That is, your cells not listening to insulin is causing the elevated insulin levels. Now, we do lots and lots of things to reverse insulin resistance, like reducing stress, eating more omega-3s, eating more live foods. All these things are reversing insulin resistance. And then the idea is, by reversing the root problem, you don't need the medication anymore, and you get your doctor's blessing and say, wow, all of a sudden your sugars are normal. I don't know what you're doing. Keep doing it. That's what they usually say. And then you don't need the insulin, and then it makes it much, much easier. Now, with depression and bipolar, well, a lot of times we have that because we're chronically stressed, we have chronic fears, and because we're having the wrong fats that are coating our brains with the wrong fat and causing problems with our neurotransmitters. Also, diet soda can cause problems with that. So we're doing different things to eat healthier fats and reduce stress, learning how to meditate and things like this, and the depression may go away on its own. And if that does, you may get your doctor's blessing to be weaned off of the medication. And when that happens, it becomes much easier to lose weight. So it's always the real issue is not what medications you're taking. It's just simply focusing on being healthy, 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 adding things that will habits like visualization and tools and food that will make you healthier, and the issue will go away, and then the medication goes away. So always make the issue go away first. See that? Shan?
Yeah, sorry, John. Regarding contraception as medication, is how much of a trigger is that one?
Yeah, that is a trigger for some people. There's no question about it. It causes a hormonal change in your body that can cause insulin resistance. So that is a trigger for some people. And there are, as we all know, there's different alternatives for the pill. So I would I would encourage you to not interfere with your hormones as much as possible, and for overall health and specifically for weight loss.
Okay. Next question is from Sally. Another one about sugar cravings attributed to menstrual cycle. Sally asks, does a woman's cycle make it harder for women to achieve their goals more than a man?
I don't think so. I'm not a woman. and I know the cycles are not easy, but I also know that there's women that don't have a problem being thin, and there's women that do have a problem being thin, and the same is true for men. So different triggers will affect you. Now, that can definitely cause more stress to you when you're having those cycles. So it's important to be very proactive when you know that you're getting to a place where you're going to be hormonal, to spend some time just really kind of being in. Don't push yourself. Go in. Rest, relax, meditate, and eat. It's probably a good time to eat red meat if you are, if you do eat animal protein. It's a good time to eat red meat because if you don't, you may tend to crave junk food. But so it is a little bit of a challenge, but it'd be a challenge for all of us. Any other questions?
Okay. Yes, I've got a couple more. Is there a nutritional difference between using baby kale and spinach versus mature kale and spinach?
Probably a subtle difference. The same way that sprouts are better for you. When something's young, it's full of life force vitality. So there might be a subtle difference. But listen, they're both really, really good. So you're really splitting hairs with that question.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry too much about that one. Yeah.
Sure. All right. Jane is mentioning Get Thin program and activated by fight or flight. And what happens if you're losing too much weight? She wants to know, how do you normalize your weight if you are losing too much?
So it's a really good question. So the question is, what happens if you lose too much weight? How do you normalize your weight? Now, the body, to me, has a brilliant kind of intelligence and logic and wants to be healthy and wants to be a normal, fit, healthy weight if you let it. So if you're doing lots of things to make yourself healthier on a hormonal level, on a mental, emotional level, on a nutritional level, healing your digestion, if you're doing these things, your body will simply normalize at an ideal weight. There's no reason for it to get too thin. There's nothing pushing it to get too thin. She's saying if you're doing the get thin or get eaten exercises, are you going to get too thin? Well, you can stop doing them if that's the case. But for the most part, your body's going to want to find an ideal healthy weight.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. That's all I have, John.
All right. Beautiful. Okay. So. Listen, everybody have an excellent holiday season, Christmas, New Year's. We'll speak to you real soon. And if you have any questions in the meantime, I still will be having office hours next week and the week between Christmas and New Year's. So please talk to me. And And in the meantime, enjoy. Thanks very much, everyone. Take care.